This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Even before the Taliban took away all of women's rights, an Afghan women's resistance group fought against the subordination of women. My guest, Cheryl Bernard, has written a history of the group RAWA, the Revolutionary Association of the Women of Afghanistan. The book is called Veiled Courage. Bernard first learned about the group during a 1982 trip to the country when she was helping assess the efficiency with which aid was being delivered to Afghan refugees by the international community. Bernard is now a consultant to the RAND Corporation in Washington, D.C. She's married to Zalmay Khalilzad, the Bush administration's special envoy for Afghanistan. He was born and raised in Afghanistan. I asked Bernard to describe RAWA.
It started out as an intellectual student movement similar to what happened in the 1970s on Western campuses, a kind of an elite phenomenon of women who got together to discuss the topics of the day and felt rebellious about some of the things in the society around them. And then Afghanistan started falling apart with the overthrow of the monarchy, the coup, the counter-coup, the Soviet occupation. And RAWA had the choice to either dissolve itself and wait for better days or to change itself into something else politically. And what happened was they underwent several transformations. They went into the opposition to the pro-Soviet government in Afghanistan, which necessitated their beginning clandestine work because the degree of repression and the number of arrests, those were very high, and the work began to become dangerous. So they started to operate underground a little bit. And then the diaspora began, and large numbers of Afghans had to flee the country because the situation became so difficult. And most RAWA members also ended up in Pakistan or in Iran in refugee camps. And again, the organization could have dissolved, especially after its founding leader, Mina, was murdered. But instead, they decided to use the resources that they had, which was mainly education, to work in the refugee camps. And they started to set up schools and literacy programs and health programs. And at that point, the organization underwent its most interesting phase because it moved from being a upper-middle-class movement of intellectuals to becoming a movement that really represented the entire population and had started to have a large number of just ordinary, rural, non-literate members who joined through attending literacy classes in the camps until it became an extremely broad-based movement. And then they started embarking on the work that they became known for in the United States, too, through a CNN, BBC documentary that many, many people saw,
Behind the Veil. Mm-hmm.
Yes. They started doing secret documentation of Taliban excesses, such as the public executions in the soccer stadium, by filming them from behind their veils. And this was work that was extremely dangerous, because if they had been caught, they definitely would have been killed.
RAWA was founded by a woman named Mina. What led her to create it? What was happening in her life that led her to create a women's group?
She was a very earnest girl, even in high school already. It was a time of great political turmoil in Afghanistan, and she found that very fascinating. She was very upset by the huge social problems and the social disparities that she saw around her. She had she was one of those teenagers with a strong social conscience. And when she became active at the university, there were a lot of political groups around, but she saw that they were missing two components. Women were not involved in them. And they weren't what she thought they should be in terms of being more normally middle of the road kind of democratic. They were more extremely left or extremely right. And she wanted a broad-based, very democratic group that allowed women to become very active in it. So she formed the first women's organization in Afghanistan.
Now, I think she went to the same university as Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, and they were there at about the same time. What is his importance in this story?
Gulbuddin Hekmatyar is one of the fundamentalist leaders, one of the mujahideen who fought against the Soviets in the 1980s. He, at the time that Mina was a student, he was a student as well. He was already a pronounced fundamentalist. He had a group around him who engaged in such pursuits as throwing acid at women students who were not dressed what, in his view, was the correct Islamic style of dress. He would have preferred women not to be allowed at the universities at all. I actually met him in Peshawar in the 1980s and interviewed him. It was a very bizarre experience. He lived in a kind of fortress setting where it was rumored that he had his own personal prison where he kept his opponents, and he was an extremely feared figure. He was associated with many assassinations and killings, and he is rumored to have killed Mina's husband, who was murdered in Pakistan along with many, many other more liberal activists during that time.
What was Mina's marriage like? Did she have an arranged marriage? Did she marry for love?
Mina is very romantic. Yes, she married for love. She met her husband at the university. And it was, from the beginning, both a personal and an intellectual partnership. We have a number of her writings on this subject. And she describes him in a way that I think one can imagine him very well. There are a number of men like that. He supported the women's movement. He supported her work. But he also could never resist a humorous approach to this, so he liked making his jokes about it as well. She had a sort of a fundamental discussion that she relates in her memoirs with him when she decided to form her own women's organization, and he asked what the relationship of that organization to his own group would be. He had a more pronounced leftist organization that he was the head of, and she told him that they would need to learn how to separate their personal relationship from their political relationship, because she wanted her group to be different from his in terms of its political values, and also to operate completely independently. It was one of the enduring problems of her political life, and also of Rawa, that Afghans found that very, very difficult to believe, and they persisted in thinking that her organization just had to be kind of a shadow of his, and that he was probably secretly in charge of the whole thing, and she was often trying to refute that, but it was hard to convince people of it.
Now, you mentioned that she had written about her views on marriage. Do you think that Mina was influenced by the Western feminist movement?
She was definitely influenced by all of the thoughts that carried through during the 1970s and 80s in the West, too, the thoughts of what women's role in society should be. She also realized something that I think contributed to her importance. She realized that since her life was very unconventional by Afghan standards and her marriage was unconventional, people were going to be watching her very closely. And she, rather than fight against that, she accepted it. And she accepted the fact that she was going to become a role model for many Afghan women. And so at various points in her life, for example, when she was pregnant, she made a point of confronting the questions that were in people's minds very openly and saying, you know, just because a woman is pregnant doesn't mean that she can't continue with her work. This was something very radical, a very radical thought for Afghan society. Just because a woman is married doesn't mean she can't have her own opinions and her own organization, and her husband cannot support that. Her husband, was very helpful in that regard, and very often also made public statements on that, saying that he realized the enormous importance of her work and the enormous importance of getting women more engaged politically. So they made their marriage also a political act in the sense of demonstrating what an alternative kind of a relationship between a man and a woman could be.
My guest is Cheryl Bernard, author of the new book Veiled Courage, Inside the Afghan Women's Resistance. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest, Cheryl Bernard, is the author of Veiled Courage, a history of RAWA, the Revolutionary Association of the Women of Afghanistan. It's also a profile of RAWA's founder, Mina. Mina, the founder of RAWA, the Revolutionary Association of Women of Afghanistan, was murdered. What do you know about the circumstances of her murder?
Mina was murdered during the mid-1980s. The Soviets were occupying Afghanistan. The United States was backing an alliance of mujahideen, of mostly fundamentalist resistance groups that were trying to eject the Soviets and were fighting against them. There were also a number of other groups, political groups based in Pakistan, who were also fighting against the Soviets, more liberal democratic groups. The U.S. did not support those groups because they thought that it would be better to support the more fanatical groups who were likely to throw themselves into the struggle against the Soviets with more fervor and abandon. And therefore, there was a power struggle among the various resistance groups, and the liberal democratic ones were systematically destroyed and their leaders killed by the fundamentalist ones. And one of those leaders was Mina.
The American government has become very sympathetic to the women's resistance in Afghanistan and to women's rights in Afghanistan. At the time that Mina was murdered, do you think that the American government then had much knowledge of her work and the women's resistance?
Or much interest? The decision had been made on a policy level that the war in Afghanistan could not be won, but one was merely going to try to increase the cost. And that fateful and erroneous decision led to liberal democratic groups getting no support from the United States. And in retrospect, we can see how extremely short-sighted and dangerous that decision was, because what happened was that education became run by fundamentalists. The next generation of Afghans was raised in madrasas, and essentially the United States helped produce the Taliban and helped produce the events that led to September 11th by encouraging one sector in that society at the expense of another. And Mina often said that if she had only a fraction of the money that each of the radical fundamentalist resistance groups was getting from the United States, she could educate all the children in the refugee camps in liberal democratic values, but she didn't get that support. She had to run her schools by running little handicraft centers and little factories and workshops by refugee women. Hopefully now that the U.S. has discovered the women as a force for democracy and for civil values in the Islamic world, this will change, and they will have that more on their radar screen, and will continue to support such groups.
What is RAWA doing now in Afghanistan?
RAWA has come to the judgment that they're worried about the interim government, and they are concerned about the high degree of participation of the Northern Alliance. And so they've decided to wait and see and could continue their activities in the border area and in the refugee camps until they feel that the security situation is better and the political situation is more reliable.
And they're worried about the former members of the Northern Alliance because the Northern Alliance was responsible for a lot of rapes when they were ruling Afghanistan.
Yes, that's correct. They have had extremely bad experiences with the Northern Alliance, and they don't trust them, and they don't think that people who have been involved in that sort of thing belong in a government. They believe that they belong on trial for war crimes, and in fact, along with the Basque government, they've initiated a proceeding that they want to try for that. They want to try to put some of these people on trial for war crimes.
Cheryl Bernard is my guest. Her new book is called Veiled Courage: Inside the Afghan Women's Resistance. We've seen several women suicide bombers in the Middle East in the past few weeks. What does it say to you that women are taking on this role that only men have done before, at least among the Palestinians? I don't know that suicide bombers are the area where we wanted equality, but still, that this must say something.
Well, for me personally, as a Western feminist, even Mina's position was very thought-provoking. She consciously, when the situation in Afghanistan started falling apart and she had to decide what to do with her organization, she made a conscious decision that women should make up their minds to take exactly the same political risks that men do, because it was her belief that the reason women haven't gotten any further in politics and aren't really taken seriously, that they continue to be cautious, that when you're out in the front risking your life, it's the men. And as long as only men do that, only men will get the power afterwards. And she decided for her organization that they were not going to do that, that they were going to take exactly the same risks that men do, and they were also going to put their lives on the line for what they believed in. However, she also determined that they wanted to be nonviolent. That's one of the founding principles of RAWA, is nonviolence. and not using arms or any kind of violent interventions. They have been widely criticized for that. And many people have felt that to take that level of risk against the Taliban and not arm yourself and not use weapons is very unwise. So I suppose the suicide bombers, the female suicide bombers, are taking the logic a step further and are saying that if you want full equal political rights, then you have to accept the full level of engagement and the full tactics and political tactics that men do. I have a problem with it, but I can see the logic.
Cheryl Bernard, I'm wondering if studying the women's resistance in Afghanistan has led you to any new thoughts about feminism in the United States.
Yes, I think that we can certainly learn a lot from RAWA, and one of the things we can learn from is their willingness to use the support of men. This is something that the women's movement in the West usually disdains, and I think that's a mistake, because if we really believe that the new society we're aiming for is better for everyone, then I don't see why men shouldn't participate in bringing it about. And for RAWA, this has been a completely natural thing to do, and for us here, it seems difficult, and I think we should study their approach. Another thing that we can learn from them is their admiration of other women. This is often very difficult for Western feminists. There's a lot of, as anyone who's been in a women's group will know, there's unfortunately a high degree of mutual criticism and of not wanting anyone to emerge as a leader, sort of a false egalitarianism. And the way RAWA admires Mina, for instance, and really devotes themselves to her principles and admires the risk she took. And that, I think, is very productive and useful, too.
Cheryl Bernard is the author of Veiled Courage, Inside the Afghan Women's Resistance. This is Fresh Air.